future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who win it now?
That'll go up after that. That's the eighth strikeout of the night for Lance McCullers Jr.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome into the bullpen. Myself, Cam Smith, John Belmer with you here until, I guess we'll go until 2 o'clock. I don't know if we get to make our own rules, but I guess we'll go until 2 o'clock. It's nice to have a show today because last week we were supposed to have a show. And then I was an old man, and I couldn't get down my stairs because my back had been thrown out. So thank you guys for joining me. Thank you for not throwing your back out so we could do a show today. How are you gentlemen doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
No comments about what I said?
I'm just glad you're okay.
Well, that's very kind of you. You missed this. You weren't here yet. I almost killed Johnny when I got to the station today.
Do tell.
So I came into the studio, and John, even though I don't think anyone was here, was editing with the door closed.
I was focused.
He was focused. That leads to how I almost killed him. So he has the door closed, and he's editing. Were you editing stuff for Gene or for this show?
Yeah, for Gene.
For Gene, okay. So he's editing, doors closed, and I simultaneously, slapped at the door handle and kicked it so I could kick it open. Because you can't kick these doors open because of the way the handle is, so... But I slapped it and kicked the door at the same time, and I think Johnny nearly had a heart attack.
Were you scared?
No, it was close. He was
clutching his chest here for a few seconds.
Oh man, set that.
I felt bad.
Set the life alert off.
Yeah. No, yeah.
You know, between
he almost fell and he couldn't get up.
Between the missed show last week and then you doing that to me this week, I think you owe me lunch or something like that.
Well, I can't buy a lunch for a dead man. So
here.
Day's not over. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. All right, let's get into the Astros, who have had a few things going on for them in their favor, I would say, recently. It's starting with, of course, Lance McCullers Jr., who had an up and down, well, actually, not even really up and down, mostly down season, although there were two starts where the earned run total was low, but he didn't really pitch well. But a pretty encouraging start on Thursday night against the Mariners and the Astros' big win. In the opening game of that series, a season-high 8 strikeouts, including 14 swings and misses. Before we get into the actual stats of what he did, Cam, what are your overall thoughts on this latest start from Lance McCullers Jr.?
Yes, Brian.
what?
I don't know. It was a good sign. We obviously, in the first game of the year for him, even though he didn't go deep into the game, it was a relatively good first start in what, almost 2 years, and then obviously
his last start before this comeback was game 3 of the World Series in 2022.
Yeah, then obviously his last start he got mollywopped. But obviously this was a really good showing, Mama Colors, and a really good sign. I mean, I'm still not going to hop on the I'm not going to say the McCullers bandwagon because I still have my reservations about him, but he has performed better these first three games that I thought that he would.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. Like, as I mentioned, the first start and his third start of the year, this last game was his fourth start. Like, if you just look at the stat board and didn't watch, or the scoreboard and the stat page and didn't watch the game, like, his earned run total allowed was pretty good. Like, I think the game before this, it was 2 runs allowed, but neither one of them were earned. But it was that one game against Cincinnati in a second start where he got only 1 out in the entire game and gave up 7 earned runs, which
Cincinnati.
Just obviously is painting. I think that's painting our overall impression of Lance post return because that start was so bad. And when you only have 4 starts, it's also going to inflate all your slash line numbers, your ERA, your WHIP, all those things. And to that point, so 4 starts in, if you take out that start against Cincinnati where he only got 1 out and gave up 7 earned runs, his ERA for the season will be 1.50.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's... Now, the negative is he hasn't reached the fifth inning yet. Like, he hasn't completed – well, he's started the fifth inning, but he hasn't completed five innings yet. His longest outing so far is 4 1/3, in part because he's still walking too many batters. In fact, of his four starts, the only start where he didn't walk at least three batters was the one where he only got one out.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And these aren't – like, if you pitch eight innings and walk three guys, that's one thing. But when you're pitching 4 1/3 and walking three guys, I mean, that's a part of the story of why he can't get to that fifth inning completed, because he's walking three guys. So I think that's something to watch for. As much as we're encouraged by the swings and misses, and I want to dig into that in a second, I think the thing to watch with Lance, and really this was true early in his career too, before the injury started racking up, like, he's had control issues, and that has continued since he came back.
Yeah, and that was one of the main things that when we were talking about our excitement for McCullers coming back was, I need to see stretches of over five innings. And now I know he's going to be on like a...
I wouldn't hold your breath.
Yeah, I know he's going to be on a pitch count, and I know those walks are going to make it incredibly hard. But that's why I'm still not hopping on the McCullers he's back thing, because I need to see more than five innings. Because if you're not giving me that, then I don't understand why. I mean, obviously we need starting pitching help, because...
You're down two. I mean, I don't think we have the official news on Blanco, but come on, he's out for the year.
Yeah, so I mean,
and Wesneski, we know, is out for the year.
At this point, you need McCullers, but until you're giving me five or six innings every game,
Here's the sad reality, Cam. Like, right now, until Eric Geddy gets back, which probably 1st of July around there, because he hasn't even started pitching yet, and he's going to have to go through like his own spring training, probably three or four minor league rehab starts. And even before that, he's going to have to throw off a mound. He's going to have to do long toss and all that. I mean, Lance is probably your three starter right now. That's where that is the state of the Astros rotation, for better or for worse, currently.
Which is odd, because 2 years ago, if you said Lance was your third, you'd be like, holy hell, what a starting rotation.
That'd be great. Yeah,
but now it's just kind of like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, like 2022, he didn't pitch a lot, because that year he didn't get back till August. But the 8 starts he had in the regular season when he came back that year in 2022, his ERA was under 3.
Yeah.
He's pitching great. It's just, you know, we know what happened in the World Series, and then obviously we know what's happened in the time between. Johnny, what is your overall impression so far of Lance?
Encouraged, I think is probably where I'm at, because I don't know how much you can actually expect from a guy that hadn't pitched in, you know, 3 years or 2.5 years, whatever it comes up to. And for him to go out there, he's got, you're correct, the walks are high. Every time I look at the screen when he's pitching, there's runners on base, and drives me crazy, right? He hasn't been consistent with that, but the strikeouts are encouraging. The breaking pitches are encouraging. Like, it looks like he's right back into the swing of what he really does. And I just think at this point, it's just reps. How can you expect somebody that's that rusty to, you know, three starts in to be, you know, lighting it up? I'm encouraged. I'm not, you know, obviously he's not back yet, but I'm encouraged.
You don't want to give us the Texas is back, but for Lance McCullers, you don't want to give us that soundbite that we could play over and over again. Johnny, I wanted you led me right into where I wanted to go next. You mentioned like the breaking pitches, and I think that's really the difference. Now, I have concerns, and we'll dig into it, about how repeatable it is, how sustainable it is. But I think that was the big difference why we saw Lance go from, okay, well, he only gave up, you know, a couple of runs, but he didn't look that great, to, oh my God, he struck out 8 guys in only 4 1/3 innings. And that was the percentage or the picks, Mitch, that he was using to make up, you know, his start. Like, before, he's always been a heavy sinker guy. He was relying a lot on the changeup, and the changeup's been okay. But the sinker and the fastball, which he doesn't use the fastball as much, have just been getting hammered. Guys are absolutely crushing it. And we saw it even in this last start. I forget the Mariners player, but the home run that the Mariners hit to make it 2-0, dude hit it. Dylan Cruz, is that his name? Dylan something? He hit it like 430 feet off the center field wall. Just absolutely smoked it. I mean, that sinker was 91 miles an hour in the middle of the zone with no movement. It's just absolutely batting practice. But here's the thing.
Get what you asked for.
Now Lance has made the adjustment. He had 3 starts going into this game on Thursday, and he adjusted to a more slider and curveball heavy mix. Of his 91 pitches, 55 were curveballs and sliders on Thursday. Like, he's going heavy curve, heavy slider. And we've seen we've seen it be effective. He had 14 swings and misses in that game on Thursday. 11 were on the slider or the curveball. Got none on the fastball or the sinker.
That is the concern for me because of all the curveballs and off-speed pitches that he was throwing that you could argue led to his injuries.
Part of it, for sure.
That is what he's doing again to be effective. Like, if that fastball's not clicking and all you're doing is off-speed
pitches, getting crushed.
People are going to wait for it and you're going to get crushed. And then you're going to blow your arm out again.
Yeah, so I mean, all the like the advanced stats like paint the same picture. Like you look at his exit velocity on the slider and the curve versus the fastball and the sinker; it's 10 miles an hour apart. Like the fastball and the sinker are getting hit like 95 miles an hour is like the technical classification for a hard hit, and they're both right at that, like 94 miles an hour. Whereas the curveball and the slider, you know, much lower, 10 miles an hour. Same thing with like expected slugging percentage. His expected slugging percentage on his fastball, guys, is over 1,000.
That's terrible.
1.036. For comparison, Aaron Judge is slugging 754.
That's like home run derby.
300 points higher.
That's like the guy throwing you the pitches in the home run derby.
It really is. Whereas when you look at the expected slug on his curveball, 393. I mean, that's amazing. That's like slugging like Martin Maldonado. And his slider is at 419. So, but you pointed on, like while I'm encouraged that both Lance and the Astros are like, hey, your slider and your curve are way better. Throw those more. Throw the fastball and the sinker less. That's great. It resulted in, you know, a pretty good outing on Thursday night. I share your concern, though, Cam, because, like, you're a dude with arm problems. And if you're having to live off of curveballs and sliders, like, how long is that sustainable for a guy who's had two Tommy John surgeries?
It's not. It sounds exactly like a relief pitcher.
He can't be a relief pitcher.
Yeah, because you're paying him a bad word. You're paying him a crap ton of money.
Were you
money.
About to say an F-load?
Yeah.
You're about to make Johnny have another heart attack here. We can't give him two in one show, man.
I mean, you obviously can't use him as a reliever because of what you're paying him.
I wasn't
you
even
need...
saying because of the money. Like, I don't think his arm can withstand, okay, getting warmed up. Oh, I'm not being used. Getting warmed up, I'm not being used. Getting warmed up. Like, he needs the every fifth day, this is exactly what I'm doing. No exceptions. Like, I don't think he can withstand. Like, if you put him in the bullpen, I think the only thing he could do would be like a scheduled like three-inning piggyback. But what is that really worth? Because he's basically just a three-inning quasi starter that day.
Hey, if the Peacock can do it, McCullers can do it.
Now we're comparing to Brad Peacock. Astros
Brad
great.
Peacock had to deal with Astros being great. Reliever, starter, reliever,
yeah,
but long reliever.
Look, I'm not saying this because, oh, Lance shouldn't have to lure himself to being a reliever. I'm not saying it because of that. I'm just saying, like, I don't think his arm can. Like,
yeah,
if you want Lance's arm pitching for you, I think it's only as a starter. John, looks
well,
like
I don't
you got
think,
a thought.
I mean, if I'm being real here, we all love Lance McCullers, but I don't think the Astros want Lance McCullers pitching for them after 2026.
No, like, they don't.
So I understand the worry of it. I just don't think it's going to be one of those worries that the Astros are going to have to worry about because they're not going to keep him after 2026 anyways.
So you're saying this kind of like when you have a running back reaching near the end of his contract, like, well, just run his legs off.
It makes me sound like a real jerk.
Yeah,
but
it does. But
like Frank Gore?
Yeah, exactly. Run his legs off, it's the next team's problem.
Well, no, that's
throw his arm off, it's the next team's problem.
Frank Gore was a monster. That was not a...
You know what Frank Gore, just a quick aside, we'll have to get to break and carry the Altuve conversation over to the next segment, but you know where Frank Gore ranks on the all-time career rushing yards list?
Yeah, he's like top five, isn't he?
Yes, but better. He's third.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He's the third leading rusher of all time.
And we never talk about Frank Gore.
Emmitt Smith, Walter Payton, Frank Gore.
Yeah.
Longevity, baby.
Frank Gore isn't eligible for the Hall of Fame yet. He hasn't been out 5 years because he played till he was 70. But, like, I mean, it's hard to say the third leading rusher of all time can't get into the Hall of Fame. But, was he ever great outside of those first few years in San Francisco? Like, he just hung on forever.
Yeah, but I mean,
I'd have to look at the year by year. But maybe I'm misremembering. But, like, he was really good early in his career in San Francisco. But after that, he was just stat compiling and hanging on.
That's true. But I think that speaks volumes because we've seen, I mean, I know we don't want to go off on a tangent of elderly running backs. But we've seen a lot of running backs after 5 or 6 years just fall off the face of the earth. And this dude, teams still wanted him.
I know.
He was still relatively productive for what he could give teams.
If, I'm being honest, I'd rather have Frank Gore today than Dameon Pierce.
I would absolutely take Frank Gore right now.
All right, we got to go to break. On the other side, when we return on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, we will talk about Jose Altuve. If you want to join in on that conversation and talk about Lance, talk about Jose Altuve possibly turning around, give us a call on the HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. Brian, Cam, John here with you today. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
I sit alone in my four-cornered room, staring at candles.
Whatever this is on. Let me drop some bits like this here.
At night I can't sleep. I toss and turn.
Two outs. Oh, yeah.
Did he do it again? You better believe it. Jose Altuve. A two home run game. Making up for lost time. And the Astros lead 8-2.
That the voice of Kevin Estrafelder filling in for Todd Callis on Space City Home Network during the Astros 9-3, 9-2 win over the Mariners on Thursday night. Jose Altuve, I mean, people were having the conversation. I mean, myself included. We had it on the Killer Bees probably a few times, having the conversation of like, okay, I mean, is it possible Father Time is now catching up with Jose Altuve? But Altuve's responded with a multiple hit game to in the Rays series. He had the two home run game on Thursday, and then obviously three hits last night against the Mariners in a 5-3 loss for your Houston Astros. So, look, I think because of his age, people are going to immediately rush to try to bury Jose Altuve whenever he has a slump, right? I think that's natural. The dude's, what, 34, 35? So whenever the people did this to Brady for years, like how many years ahead of Brady's actual retirement were we seeing like, okay, now the Patriots are done, and then they won like 2-3 more Super Bowls.
Yes.
And then he goes on and wins the Super Bowl with the Bucks. I remember articles at least like 2017 saying Brady was done. They win the Super Bowl in 18. Obviously, he wins one with the Bucks in 20. So I think people are going to rush to bury Altuve. But certainly bouncing back last night, Cam, last night and the night before.
Never hate on your short kings.
Are you saying that as a short king? Is that what you're saying? You got his back because not only is he a great baseball player headed to the Hall of Fame, but
yes,
he's the inspiration to all short kings.
Us vertically challenged folk
there you go.
Have to stick together. What do y'all want from him? He switched positions for the team now because he's not crushing the ball. Everybody wants to hate on Altuve.
So I was curious because we would have these conversations, you know, pretty much every year for Alex Bregman about, well, you know, he sucks right now, but we know he's not good until it becomes June. So like, just relax when the calendar turns over to June, when, you know, when we start hearing tropical storm warnings, Alex Bregman will be fine, right? That was always the Alex Bregman timeline.
Well, except for this year,
because Boston apparently has better hitting coaches than the Astros do, and they figure out a swing. But I was curious if something like that did exist for Jose Altuve as well. And when I was looking at his career splits, something popped up to where, now we're still in the month of May, but when you look at May for Jose Altuve, and this is going all the way back to the beginning of his career, 2011, I looked at his career split, so this is factoring every year, not just recently. May is his lowest home run total for any month of the year. May is his lowest batting average month for any month of the year. It's his second lowest OPS month for any month of his career, and it's the month with the most grounded into double plays of any month of his career. For some reason, May has just been a kryptonite for Jose Altuve. He starts hot, he backs off, and then he explodes again. And now we're May 24th, this hot streak starting, you know, a couple of days ago. I think this just may be not Father Time, but Jose Altuve, for whatever reason, slumps in May. I don't know what's
Cinco
going
on. Cinco de
Mayo. Yeah, oh, okay. He's not even Mexican, he's Venezuelan.
We all celebrate.
Okay, that's fair. We all Cinco de Drinco. That's true.
Yeah, no, I'm not gonna lie. I was a little nervous about what he was doing offensively. But
thought it might be Father Time.
Maybe. So
you weren't sticking up for your short kings.
Always
short king fraud.
How dare you
fraud Cam Smith?
I'm gonna stone this man. But aggressive. I also think that there's more of a microscope on him this year because Jordan's out. Christian Walker can't do diddly poop. We've seen Bregman go. We've seen Kyle Tucker go. So I think that if this was any other year,
Yonder Diaz has been terrible.
Yonder Diaz has been terrible. I think this if this was any other year with the same stats, we wouldn't be like, oh, Altuve's really struggling. Father Time's catching up to him. Like, he's about to skip the line at Luby's. But I think because of what
Luby's catching strays.
Because I think of what this team is made up of and the fact that, again, Jordan's out and Christian Walker's not doing anything, I think there's more of a microscope on what he's doing. But like you said, May is obviously the worst month of his entire career. So
yeah, I have no explanation for it. But the numbers, I mean, this is not like a 2-year sample size. This is going back to 2011, his rookie year. Lowest batting average, fewest home runs, second lowest OPS, most ground into double plays. Like, I don't know. It's just there's something about May with Jose Altuve. But John, what have you thought of Altuve this year? And do you think he's actually starting to turn it around? Are you with me on that?
I mean, I think I'm with you on it. This week has been particularly good for him compared to recent the recent stretch before this. But, you know, maybe it's a little bit of both. You talk about the May thing. I think that's kind of an outlier. We have fun with it, you know, Cinco de Mayo, whatever.
14 years.
It's 14 years, but, like, maybe it's just this is that time of the season where it's you're now a couple months into it. You're starting to get, in the dregs of the season. Once you get closer to the playoffs, maybe it picks up. Maybe it's just that month. I don't know. I think that's more of an anomaly. I think what you're going to see, we've maybe seen it a little bit last year. We've definitely seen it this year, and you'll see it going forward, is like more inconsistency from Altuve. He'll still do Altuve things, but he also is getting old. So you're going to find like you see both of those things, like maybe more stretches of dips, more, you know, strikeouts. I don't know what that turns into. But heck, he also defies it too. Like last night, that arm came to life. He threw somebody out at the plate from left field. So, you know, I think you'll see like it'll start to trend that way. But we still got a couple more good years of Altuve.
Age is just a number. And a number is just a number. And, Jonathan, I like that you brought up that throw. Great. Yeah, he did throw somebody out.
Mm-hmm.
But let's keep in mind that what's that dude's name? Kyle Riley.
No, don't take away the credit from Altuve here. Don't discredit
Sorry,
who
it. Who you trying to
who he threw out?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
I think it was.
One of the slowest.
Oh, the big dumper, Kyle
runners.
Riley. Yeah.
And he should have never ran around third base. So you're right. I'm not going to take away from Altuve. Altuve still did throw him out by a mile, but
it was the big dumper.
It was, yeah. I mean, my ass could have thrown him out.
I think you could have, too. But I'm just trying to give Altuve a little bit
of
credit.
No.
What I'm hearing
that.
Is John Belmer more of an ally to Short Kings than Cam Smith.
Yeah, I
here, John is
I'm
pointing
only 5'9". I'm part of the show. I'll call myself part
usually
of the
Usually BMAC is the one making fun of people, especially short people. But now John is doing it.
No, John was on his side. You're over here nitpicking his outfield assist.
Oh, you're right. You're right. We're besties again. Sorry.
All right. So I'm very encouraged with Jose Altuve. I mean, obviously, it's an extremely small sample size, but I think there's a lot.
Oh, extremely small, huh?
I wasn't even intending to do that, but you know what? I'm going to go with it. He is a wee man. Yes, he's a wee man. All right. If you want to get your thoughts in on Lance McCullers and Jose Altuve, give us a call or text on the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Brian, Cam, and John here with you. But let's go over to some of the other Astros and check in with them, get a little bit of a vibes check about what's going on with some of these guys. Cam, you mentioned a minute ago the struggles of Christian Walker. Let's start off with the negative there with Christian Walker, because he actually started, and maybe this is a reason to pause on the Altuve enthusiasm, but he started the month of May, Christian Walker, that is, pretty hot. Brought his batting average up from 198 to 225 with eight hits in eight out of the nine games through that stretch. But since May 11th, the Astros' last 12 games, Christian Walker is hitting 106, 5 of 47. I mean,
is that bad?
We were killing Jose Abreu for hitting like 160.
I was just about to bring up the fact that he's worse. He's literally worse than what Abreu was.
No, he's not just worse than Jose Abreu. He's far worse than Jose Abreu. At least in this, you know, maybe not over the entire season, he's worse than Jose Abreu. But in this stretch, last 12 games, 106 batting average.
I swear to God, they don't know. It's almost like Nick Caserio, an offensive lineman. The Astros in first baseman.
Right.
I do not.
Or at least a veteran first baseman. Well, they got the Yuli Gurriel thing, right? He was a veteran first baseman. But ever since then, like, they tried the trade for Trey Mancini. He couldn't hit.
Matt Dominguez, Chris Carter.
Oh, now you're going back a little ways.
John Singleton,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, dear God, six out of the last seven first basemen have been.
What's Bagwell doing? I know he's in the booth sometimes. I know he can't throw, but not. I'm kidding.
Speaking of not throwing, but that I dude mean, towards the end of his career,
what do you guys? I mean, it feels like a silly question because they paid the man, but we just did this with the last first baseman. What do you guys think the leash is for Christian Walker? I mean,
he's longer than Jose Abreu.
Well, Jose Abreu got a year in what, 2 months?
Yeah,
because it was about this time last year where he got sent to Florida before eventually being released.
Because Well, one, Christian Walker's a little younger, and two, eventually this is going to run out of steam, but I get that he's still hitting balls hard.
Yeah, his barrel percentage, his bat speed, like some of those metrics are all still fine, but we said the same thing about Jose Abreu and trying to justify, like when he signed here, people were like, oh, he only hit 15 home runs, it dropped off by like 10 or whatever it was from the year prior, but like, yeah, but look, the barrel rate, the hard hit percentage, the bat speed, they're all still there. And then, you know, what happened?
Well, he also had the Johnny Depp beard. So that gave him a little extra time.
So, I think it's like this time next year, I think it's basically kind of the same timeline as Abreu. Maybe even a bit longer, as you said, because he is a tad younger than Jose Abreu was. But at this time next year, if he's still hitting like this, I think we're having like the serious conversation of like, do we DFA this guy? Because that's what they did to Jose Abreu. Now, yeah, I think he eventually will turn it around. I mean,
I hope to God he does.
I mean, maybe this is silly optimism, but I think the combination of the slow start to the season because he missed spring training with the oblique injury. And just maybe the natural slow start that a lot of players have. Like, I think when we, like, fast forward a month from now, I think, God, I think, knock on wood, cross fingers, I think we're talking about Christian Walker starting to turn it around. Do you have any sort of optimism that, or are you fully just waiting?
I do, because he's always been a really consistent player, especially, like, offensively. And I think this is just a really weird first month for him, and like you mentioned, he did get injured, and obviously the oblique injury, when you're talking about in terms of swinging, is going to be a major issue because you're literally turning every single swing. And I still think he's going to have a longer leash than Jose Abreu, but I think it's just I'm not even going to say because of what this team is built around that we're microscoping him, because 198 is just terrible, no matter.
Yeah, 198 for the season, then again 106 over the last 12 games. So let's get to some good.
It's just weird because you think that if he could hit it in Arizona, going to a hitter friendly park like Minute Maid,
I mean Arizona,
Daikin or whatever.
Deacon.
I don't know.
Deek is a hockey term. What are we doing here? Cam trying to bring the NHL to Houston. Hopefully that'll happen here in a couple years. But let's end this segment on some of the positives real quick. Since we talked about the bad vibes from Christian Walker, Isak Paredes, man, that he's been better. I was pushing the let's have a little bit of caution on how much power we're expecting, like the ballpark factors thing. I was wrong. In May right now, Isak is hitting .289 with a .999 OPS, seven home runs. Seven home runs so far in May is 162 game pace of 56 home runs.
So it's going to be dude, him and Cam is, Smith with 50 home run seasons.
Dude is crushing it. Like, yeah. I mean, I would even say on the defensive side, like, he doesn't have the range of Alex Bregman, but, like, he basically gets everything hit at. Like, anything he touches, he's getting.
But that's fine, because Astros are arguably the best defensive team, if not a top three defensive
certainly
team in the
infield.
League.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Like, I kept getting all these notifications every day, Paredes homer run. And I literally was like, are these this old notifications? But it's just like every single day it seemed like he was dropping balls.
Yeah, like, I don't know how many games he's played in May, probably like 18 or 19, but 56 home run pace if you went off what he's done in May. You mentioned Cam Smith. So really turning around now. The power hasn't come through yet. He's got three home runs in the season. But in May, he's hitting .314 with the batting average, .789 OPS. I mean, for a dude who was playing for Florida State this time last year, I will wait for the power. I'm fine with waiting. If you can hit .314 with a near 800 OPS, sign me up.
And not to mention, he's playing really well in the outfield, which is not his natural position.
No, the dude, he did start playing right field to like the last three games of spring training, something like that. Because they kept playing him at third. And there seems like there's a play every game that's got a low catch percentage, and Cam Smith is making the play. So vibes definitely positive for Cam Smith. One more before we get out, because I feel like if we don't talk about it now, we might not be able to talk about it next week. And that is Jake Meyers.
Yeah,
Jake Meyers. And I say that because he did the same thing last year, and we know what happened. So just to make the point, Jake Meyers this year hitting .309, .797 OPS, .126 OPS plus, just great numbers, especially considering what you were expecting from Jake Meyers. Problem is, last year, after the same time point in time, 50 games, he was hitting .289, .849 OPS. And yet he finished the season last year hitting .219 with a .646 OPS and became even worse than I think what our expectations were coming to the season. So I want to be very positive about Jake Meyers because he's absolutely been Jake the Rake, Jake from Rake Farm, whatever the Astros want to put up the graphic for. But we saw this same script play out last year where he started extremely hot and then he diverted to arguably the worst offensive player on the team.
True. I think this year's a little different because I think he's playing a little more consistently. He's not really splitting as much time as he was.
Yeah, I don't remember the game log there, but that could be true.
Last year. And also, in terms of defense, when I was here last night, they flashed something on the TV, and don't quote me, but I think it was talking about like run saved.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was. Either way, he's basically number one as like a center fielder.
Well, that makes sense. He's got elite range.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a great arm in center field. Well, I mean, neither is Chaz. You really don't have a center fielder with a big arm that would be available to you, but his range is elite.
It's crazy.
That being Jake Meyers. All right, we'll go to break down on the other side of the break when we get back, talk about Houston Texans and an injury that popped up for Joe Mixon, our concern there. And then I think we're getting gaslighted by the Texans on the state of their offensive line. We'll talk about all those things next on the other side of the break. Bullpen, ESPN Radio, 97.5, 92.5. Don't go anywhere.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, as I try to come back in my James Hetfield voice while Metallica plays underneath me. Oh, man, that kind of hurt. Were you transported there, Cam? You look shocked and amazed with my James Hetfield voice. Yeah!
It just came out so naturally.
Yeah, no, I was actually... I don't know if I'm going to do the show the day I'm about to mention, but I'm actually going to the Metallica concert on June 14th.
Who? I'm just kidding.
Who? You son of a...
I had to.
I know. I know what you're doing, but it's still triggered me.
Where are they jamming out?
I mean, take a guess.
Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion.
No, it's the Energy Stadium.
Really?
Speaking of which, you know who else plays at Energy Stadium? The Houston Texans. What do you think of that transition there, Johnny?
A-minus.
A-minus. All right. I like that.
Generous.
No, I think that was fair. If anything, he underrated me.
That's like a teacher at the end of the semester that's just like, I'm done with it. A-minus.
Speaking of which, are you done for the year?
Hell no. We go until June 4th.
Oh, my God. See, my wife's a teacher's done. My daughter, who's in school, this different school district, goes till Thursday. So I never know. Everyone's so different. You go to June 4th? Is that what you said?
Yes, but it's also HISD. And as everyone knows, HISD is hot trash.
You want to be careful how much you trash them?
I do not care.
Considering your employment? Okay.
Do not care.
All right. You do you, Cam. You do you. All right. So we're going to get into the...
What, are they going to fire me?
I mean, possibly. I mean, that is the option. Yes. If you want to get on this Texans conversation, give us a call, 713-780-3776, or a text. That's how you can reach us on the HRMP listener line. Brad McDonald, Cam Smith, John Delmer here with you on the bullpen. So this came out in this audio we're about to hear from Aaron Wilson. It was during like a YouTube stream right after I think he filmed a show for ABC or NBC. I don't remember which one. But a little surprise nugget of news came out about the status of Joe Mixon.
Had a few people ask me about Joe Mixon. I'll throw this in there at the end. So my understanding is it's nothing serious with Joe. It may cause him to miss a little bit of time in the spring, but it's nothing alarming. I think he'll be ready for training camp, maybe even ready sooner than that. But right now, yeah, I don't think he'll be doing any practices. And so it's something, but it's not anything real big.
Now, maybe this is PTSD from
last year.
Well, I was going to say following the Astros, and Kyle Tucker will be back 2 days later, turned into 3 months, and oh yeah, he has a broken leg. So maybe this is Astros PTSD. Christian Javier has a neck injury. Oh wait, never mind, it's Tommy John. Justin Verlander has an injured neck. Oh wait, no, it's Tommy John. Like, maybe this is my PTSD from all that.
Lance McCullers has a stinger in the arm.
Yeah.
Oh wait, 3 years later.
Yeah, 3 years. Flash forward.
2 years later.
3 years later. Yeah. So maybe this is PTSD from that, but when... Like, I mean, Aaron Wilson, as he lays it out, one, he doesn't tell us what the injury is. I think I heard that it was ankle, but he doesn't say in the report. But the fact that he says, well, I think, like, well, he won't be practicing, which I honestly do not care a single bit if Joe Mixon practices during OTAs in June. Do not, or even minicamp in June. Do not care a single bit. In fact, I would ask them not to have him practice in June because he'll be turning 29 in July and he's an older running back and I want to save, you know, all the reps and the hits that you possibly can for when it counts. But the idea of still an older running back dealing with an injury and the, I think, being put into it kind of gives me a little bit of a pause and a cause for concern in the back of the mind. Like, I don't know, like if Joe Mixon was 23, whatever, you know, I mean, these guys will bounce back. But for, I mean, 29, which will be next or in July, I mean, it feels like once a running back reaches that age, like, even the injuries that should be minor cause even, you know, more concern than they normally would. But what is your thought over this little nugget of news that Joe Mixon's a little banged up?
Tis a nugget of news. I'm not concerned because didn't this happen last year?
Yeah. He had a hamstring injury.
And he came back and did what he...
And it was even later. I think it was like the second day of training camp or something like that.
So I'm... And that's the thing. Everybody talked like, oh, Joe Mixon's got all these injury issues with he was with Cincinnati. So, like, this is just something you're going to have to live with when it comes to Joe Mixon. But again, last year, same thing. He's hurt. He was ready to go at the start of the season and put in 1,000 yards. I think the more concerning thing for me is not so much Joe Mixon. It's just the fact that it's the running backs behind him.
That's right. Like, yeah.
None of them make me feel good.
That's an interesting way to put it. Like, oh, hey, Cam, what running back makes you feel good,
if they were on a dating app, they would all be swiped left.
Hey, Johnny Belmer, what running back makes you feel good?
Yeah.
Yeah, what running back makes you feel good, Johnny?
Woody.
Oh, thank you, John. Oh. You took the low-hanging fruit, and you picked that sunbeam right off the tree. Well done, Johnny.
Woody.
Woody Marks, the reference there, the Texans rookie running back out of USC. But I think that's kind
of... Mark it down. Johnny likes Woody.
I mean, we do... I guess we do have that on tape now. I mean, Cam's got a drop. I think I might have a drop about liking churros. I don't know if Johnny saved that or not, but...
I need to grab it, but I do have a good Cam drop that I just... It just sits there.
It just sits there. Should I introduce Cam Smith before you can fire this drop?
Yeah, absolutely.
So my co-host today is Cam Smith.
I am Cameron Smith, and I think Donald Trump is a fat ass.
Hey, look.
I forgot about that one.
I actually thought it was going to be the Welcome to the Show Cam Smith one. I thought it was going to be that one.
Oh, yeah, I do have that one.
Yeah, okay. But,
no, I don't want to boast.
Johnny decided to take things up a notch and capture you calling the president a fat ass. I mean, facts, but I mean, still.
See?
Yeah, I mean, facts.
What?
Yeah, I mean, facts, but anyway, okay. We got to get off of talking about Donald Trump before we alienate half the fan base. But in Houston, probably even larger than half. But so Joe Mixon, as I struggle to regain control of the show here. I think that's the concern. It's not so much that, oh, it's May and he twisted an ankle. Like, that's the concern. It's like, it's more projecting forward. Like, if this dude does get injured, like, we saw him, what, twice have a horse collar injury that kept him out of games last year. If this dude misses a game, I mean, hopefully Woody Marks is pretty good. We don't know. He was a mid-round running back. It wasn't like this was a day one or day two pick. I believe a fourth-round pick for Woody Marks. But behind,
yeah, they really reached for him.
I mean, but Damian Pierce, we no one trusts Damian Pierce. We don't want Dare getting a ton of work. Like, I think we all had a concern about the Texans' running back depth going into this offseason. And so far, like, the only real addressing of it that they've done is a fourth-round pick. So I kind of feel like we're still where we were when the offseason began.
Yeah, it was really weird. Like, I expected them to use a draft pick relatively high to get a running back. I did not expect them to go get Woody Marks, who is basically valued as like a seventh rounder. There were way better running backs, in my opinion, and based off of some of these like mock, these like draft like write-ups and stuff, than Woody Marks. But I know that he's a little different in the fact that he's like an exceptional pass catcher, which is what they're talking about. Joe Mixon's not really known for that. So
I mean, he does okay on screen.
He can
does
do
okay
it.
On
they
screens,
just they don't
but,
do it.
Yeah.
But for me, it was just kind of like you really went and got Woody Marks in the fourth round just because he's an exceptional pass catching running back. Like, it just, I don't know. It just, I didn't like the move. And yeah, I don't care for any of these running backs.
Yeah, but it doesn't. I don't think running back really matters where you draft. I mean, running backs can be found kind of anywhere in there. You can hit on them. You can find a diamond in the rough.
The odds go down, though.
The odds go down. But like, we've seen one of the best running backs in this franchise was an undrafted guy. So
true.
Like,
facts.
You know, true. Like, I just think for running back specifically. Like, I hold out that judgment until we get to see him on the field.
So, yeah, and, like, we're not relying on Woody Marks, but I think it just goes into the point of the concern of Joe Mixon that if in the case
that – if he gets horse-collared again
– and he's out for a few games, you are screwed because
– Yeah, if you go into a game and your running backs are Dare, Damian Pierce, and Woody Marks, I mean, CJ Stroud's going to be passing the ball a lot.
Yeah, and people are going to be like, oh, but Damian Pierce averaged, like, 7 yards a carry last year. Okay. Calm down. He had
Did he have
170 yards in one game, and that was basically 9/10 of all his rushing yards last year.
I can't imagine he averaged. What did you say? What number did you say?
7.3. He had 40 carries for 293 yards, and 176 of those came in one game, which means he was basically hot ass for 16 games of the year until that final game.
The term hot ass can be taken a number of different ways.
Trash ass.
That could be taken as a very positive thing as well. So I don't know how you're meaning it.
I apologize. Cold ass.
All right. We're done with this segment. Let's get out. Bullpen ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. You want to join in the Texans conversation, give us a call or a text on the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Brian, Cam and John here with you. When we get back on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the Texans and their offensive line. And if we're being gaslit by Nick Asterio, don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5. The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome to the show. We got about an hour and 10 minutes left here on this program. Cam, you in next week? I decided right now I just check live on air. Maybe I could put some peer pressure.
I'm always in.
You're always in. Okay. So we'll have a show next week as well. Right now we're going to talk Texans. And if we're being gaslit, I can't see. Is that the right terminology?
I think
there?
Gaslit.
Gaslit better than are we being gaslighted?
Yes.
Okay. Our gas is being lit.
Is the gas being lit? 713-780-3776. That is the HRP listener line. If you want to join the show, give us a call or text again, 713-780-3776. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Belmer here with you. So as I was able to tease there about being gas lit, let's listen to this audio from Texans GM Nick Caserio getting asked a question by the most adorable fan and about the state of the offensive line. And one part of Nick Caserio's answer stood out to me.
So I heard her earlier ask about the offensive line protecting Stroud. Poor thing is just running for his life. So but your first picks wasn't an offensive lineman. Please explain.
Yeah, I'm happy to explain it. Yeah, the draft is not, it's an inexact science. So we rank the players, we stack the board, the players come off the board at different points. I would say we try to move around the board. We try to move up, I would say, multiple. I mean, look, you guys know us. We pretty much trade every draft pick that we have. So, but we try to move up and down the board. Sometimes there's a trade partner that works itself out. Sometimes there isn't. So the way it worked itself out, we ended up moving out of 25. We picked Jaden at 34, and then we picked Ursary at 48 or 49, you know, who was one of the like top-ranked tackles in the draft that we liked. So, again, it's never about one pick. It's never about one player. I think the offensive line in and of itself is about five guys playing as one. So, again, I would say for D'Amico and I, we're not concerned about it. So we're not concerned about it. You guys certainly shouldn't be concerned about it either.
So that is the line that irked me. But before we get to Caserio, we got to talk about that fan question. Poor C.J. Stroud running for his life. I mean, the only thing missing from that question was at some point for the fan to say, bless his heart, when referring to C.J. Stroud, to make it more Texan.
I remember my first drink.
Poor thing.
That poor thing running for his life when you don't draft offensive line. I love that. At some point, the people around start laughing. He's like, no, I'm serious, y'all.
Poor thing.
Yeah, we got to keep that as a drop for CJ. Whenever we talk about CJ Stroud, he will be.
He had a couple of shiners before that question.
Poor thing. Yeah, poor thing. But getting past the fun nature of the question that was, or how the question was asked. Look, I will start off by saying Nick Caserio and obviously D'Amico Ryans as well have no choice but to talk positive about their offensive line, right? Like, they get asked a question about, you know, what do you think of the offensive line? They're not going to come out here and say, yeah, well, we like Cam Robinson, but the rest of these guys, straight garbage. Like, they have no choice but to say they have faith in their guys, that these guys can be better than what we saw last year. But I have a problem with the way Caserio delivered that message at the very end there, where he says, if D'Amico and I aren't concerned about it, neither should you. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it just came off very condescending. And I love the opportunity to ask the follow-up question to Caserio, who told us, well, we're not concerned about it this year, so you shouldn't be either. Like, well, were you concerned about it last year? Because I'm sure you would have told us you weren't, and your offensive line was terrible.
Or in case you forgot, the fans put money in your pocket, so the fans should be concerned. They have every reason to be concerned. It's their team. They're the ones spending a crap ton of money to put their asses in that stadium.
Yeah, the whole thing prior to the draft, do you remember the thing with Caserio where he kept saying, like, I don't even know what drafting for need means?
Yeah, see, I hate
and then
his
there
responses
was like a couple
to draft
years,
questions.
Like, a couple years before that, he was asked about, like, what do you view your window? Like, we all know what window means in sports, like your opportunity to win, right? Yeah. And so he was asked a question like about their window. He's like, well, I don't even know what window means. Like, there's just been this track record of Caserio at times answering questions in a very condescending way that like talking down to us like we're just, you know, I don't know, a bunch of serfs, a bunch of plebes that don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah. And to add on to like his interview when they asked him, like, do you draft on, like, what needs? And he was like, no, we don't do needs, really. That's funny, because you went and got two wide receivers with your first
and then what was
picks,
the, what was the pick? Yeah.
100% reflects need.
Yeah, I remember I broke it down. It was right after the draft. Can you pull up their draft tracker? You'll pull it up quicker than I would. But like you mentioned, yeah. So Nick Asterio, who tells you we don't draft by need, and we'll get back to the offensive line part of this in a second. But their first pick, wide receiver, was that a need?
Yep,
that was a need. Their second pick was Ursary, the offensive tackle. Was that a need?
Yep,
that was a need. Jalen Noel, a wide receiver, was that a need?
Yep,
that was a need. Woody Marks, depth running back, is that a need?
Yeah.
Depth running back?
Depth at running
yeah,
back.
Yeah, depth running back. I mean, so the only pick, I believe it's the only pick of the first five that wasn't a need was the...
Jalen Smith?
Yeah,
the cornerback from USC,
right. So, yeah, this idea of, well, we don't draft for need. Oh, so it's just a coincidence that you're only drafting players that positions that you need.
It's
huh?
just asinine because unless your team is undefeated and you win the Super Bowl, your team needs something.
Yeah. 30 out of 32 teams usually have several needs.
Even Kansas City and Philadelphia have needs.
Yeah, I would say the Eagles have, well, they would have had fewer, but they released a bunch of players and traded players away, so they created some needs for themselves. But, yeah. I mean, there's very few teams each year that could truly say, like, we don't really have much that we need, so we're just going to draft, like, truly best player available. I think the answer to that is the middle ground that they don't ever seem willing to acknowledge. And I think it's in part because they want to try to maintain some air of unpredictability, right? They don't want teams to know they're going to do. But the thing is, all these other teams can look at your roster and go like, oh, well, they need offensive guard. Oh, they need wide receiver. Like, even if you say your BPA, your best player available, teams can still look at your roster and figure out what your needs are. Like, all the mock drafts list, you know, team needs, that all those teams can see them as well. So, I mean, I think the answer there, and we'll get back to the offensive line right after this, but you pick the best player available that fits one of your position of needs.
Exactly.
Like, if you have five positions of need, the Texans, I mean, you know, offensive line, depth running back, wide receiver, and I would say defensive tackle. Those were their big four needs. Like, you're drafting best player available at one of those positions. If the best player available was a quarterback with their first pick, would they have taken it? Of course not. So you're not BPA.
Yeah, and... sure, in the later rounds, 5, 6, 7, you're not drafting on
things.
You're drafting on best player available in depth. But those first four rounds,
first three.
It is all about need.
Yeah, 100%. So getting back to what he actually said about the offensive line. Do you actually buy into the idea of we shouldn't be concerned about the offensive line?
Hell yeah, we should be concerned about the offensive line.
I mean, absolutely, right? I mean, it's...
They didn't get any better.
Right. I mean, look, I get the idea that... And I think Casario says it in this clip. I think that we don't have time to play the D'Amico clip, but he says it as well. Like, there is something to... Sometimes the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, right? There is something to that with the offensive line. Sometimes it's cohesiveness, guys working together, that can make an offensive line group more talented than the individual pieces would lead you to believe they are. But you can't tell me a Texans offensive line that was straight garbage last year, loses its best player, has become any more talented than it was the year before. Like, you lose Laremy Tunsil, top five offensive tackle in the game. You replace him Cam Robinson, who's worse than Laremy Tunsil. You lose Kenyon Green, which that's a positive, but then you replace him with two offensive guards and Lincoln Tomlinson and Ed Ingram, who are as bad or worse than Kenyon Green, at least by the stat of pressures, one-on-one pressures allowed last year. They were as bad or worse than Kenyon Green in that stat. And then you've got, you know, a rookie with Ursary, a second-year player, Blake Fisher, which we have no idea what he's capable of doing. He didn't play a whole lot last year. And then, obviously, Juice Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson, who I think are serviceable, but they're not plus starters. So, like, the overall talent of this offensive line hasn't improved. Okay, you did change out a couple of coaches, so maybe that is the unknown factor where you could improve even though the talent of the offensive line didn't improve. But I don't buy this idea of, like, well, there's no reason to worry. We're not worried. I mean, come on.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just getting annoyed, I think, at times with the way Nick Casario talks about things. Like, and maybe more so about the approach this offseason of how they address the offensive line. Not only did they get less talented as far as the players that actually make up the offensive line, But the changes they made for their coaching staff, you promoted from within offensive line coach Popovich Jr. out there. Greg Popovich is kidding. I'm kidding. Cole Popovich. Offensive line was terrible. You replaced your offensive line coach by promoting from within. That's a red flag to me. And then, okay, Bobby Slowik is the problem, and replace him with a Nick Caserio yes man, kind of, in Nick Caley, who was a tight ends coach in New England under Nick Caserio.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know if you brought in necessarily new ideas, new people to reinvigorate the offensive line, or you just kind of ran things back with kind of the same crew.
A little bit.
All right, we got to get to the break. On the other side, we will have some leftover bits here. Maybe a little bit of NFL, maybe a little bit of the WNBA, because Angel Reese is certainly making some headlines for the wrong reason. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.